55 degrees currently in New York City, going up to a high today of 59 degrees and cloudy in the city. It's 12 noon. Upcoming shortly will be the Gary Null Show.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
These are the eyes that never knew how to smile till you came into my life. And these are the arms that long to lock you inside every day.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Today, we're going to talk about ways that we can de-stress. And the first that I'm going to share with you is from the National Institute of Occupational Safety and Health. And it talks about how a simple combination of two ingredients, curcumin, that's from turmeric, C-U-R-C-U-M-I-N, and fenugreek, F-E-N-U-G-R-E-E-K, helps relieve work-related stress. Well, who doesn't have some kind of work-related stress? Just think of all the truck drivers on those long hauls. Think of all the cab drivers and livery drivers in New York City and any other place where you're listening. Or just think of you in a commute. All these things can create stress. So something as simple as having curcumin and fenugreek in combination boosts the quality of life index in the study's population, and they were all suffering from work-related stress. Now, the researchers noted that the National Institute of Occupational and Study and Health, what I call NIOSH, which is, by the way, a federal agency responsible for research into the prevention of work-related illness, has said that the rapidly changing nature of the workplace has resulted in rising levels of work-related stress, including neurodegenerative disorders and, worse still, cardiovascular disease, heart attacks, strokes. They're up. A key component of these illnesses is oxidative stress. And they found that a plant-derived dietary antioxidant polyphenols combination, what we call the phytonutrients, play a vital role in the upregulation of the endogenous antioxidant defenses, meaning something outside of ourselves that we take inside the body to maintain the cellular redox balance and to reduce the oxidative stress. But I won't tell you in scientific language. So what does this mean in lay language? Simple. Simply take some fenugreek and some 500 milligrams twice a day of curcumin, also about 100 milligrams of fenugreek, and that will help. Take that for 30 days. See if you don't see a difference in how you feel about being stressed in the environment. Next up, beetroot, that's your beet, is good before exercise, but also it helps the aging brains look younger in a study. Wake Forest University did the study. Drinking a glass of beet juice before working out makes your brain, especially if you're an older person over the age of 40, perform more efficiently, mirroring the operations of a younger brain. That's according to the Wake Forest University scientist. Now, this is the first experiment to test the combined effects of exercise and beet juice on functional brain networks in the motor cortex and secondary connections between the motor cortex and the insula, I-N-S-U-L-A, which supports mobility. And they found it made a big difference. It also lowered blood pressure. And so that's important. So 3 times a week for 6 weeks, they drank beet juice every day and found a big difference. Or you could walk for an hour, and it also makes a difference. So good news there. I'm an advocate of acupuncture. I get it all the time. Makes a big difference, especially if you have pain, but for all kinds of conditions. Also, I can use it preventatively. It's not painful. It's not takes very long, about half hour. And it's not that expensive. But it does more, especially if you get into electroacupuncture. From the Karolinska Institute in Sweden, they found that electroacupuncture can improve regulation of blood sugar in overweight and obese women. That's not easy to do. Now, you can do it if you exercise twice a day for about 45 minutes. And if you also get rid of all the high glycemic foods, meaning the foods or beverages that when you take them just spike your blood sugar. But most people, unfortunately, they're addicted to certain foods that are almost always unhealthy. So for women who are overweight or obese and are unable to exercise, new research appearing online in the FASEB, that's a scientific journal, suggests combining acupuncture with an electrical current can help. In the report, an international team of researchers used electroacupuncture to assist with muscle contraction, which led to improved blood sugar regulation. So it also seemed to benefit women with polycystic ovarian syndrome, the most common hormonal disorder among women, which is associated with prediabetes and increased risk of developing type 2 diabetes. Last week, I mentioned how good watercress was for you. Well, there's even more on that. From the University of Pittsburgh Cancer Institute, watercress extract detoxifies carcinogens in smokers, and that's important. Think of all the people in our lives who smoke or have. Now, the fact that you stop smoking doesn't mean that automatically everything's okay. All the damage that you did is fixed. It's not. I'll give you an example of this. I visited an anti-aging clinic in Germany, and there was a Dr. Popoff who ran it, and a Dr. Golwak. And I was looking at all the different therapies they were offering, including hyperbaric oxygen therapy. And this goes back almost 30 years. And a friend of mine joined me, Neil. And so he asked both of us, he said, would you like to try the lung cleansing chamber? I said, sure. It looked like a little sauna. Just had a little chair in it. You walked in, and it had a vaporizer. And it was throwing out winter mint and eucalyptus and some herbs into the air. And so it was very pleasant. You just sat there for 20 minutes and breathed in this beautiful aromatic substance. Well, I came out, and you have a box of Kleenex in there. And he said, use any? I said, no. You didn't cough up any? I said, no. My buddy Neil, he used half the box, and it was all black. And Dr. Popoff said, you were a smoker. He said, used to be. I gave it up 10 years ago. He said, that still was in your lungs from all that smoking. Hard to imagine, because Neil had become very healthy. He was a vegetarian, and he juiced, and he was a great athlete. But it taught me in that moment that we should never take what we've done in the past that has caused us health problems for granted, that somehow because we're no longer doing something, no longer eating sugar, no longer eating, you know, chemicalized processed foods, no longer microwaving, that somehow all the damage is repaired, it's behind us. It's not. That's why detoxification is so important, what we call the cleansing and then rebalancing. Well, watercress and your other bitters are very important in helping you to detoxify. Chlorella, spirulina, and wheatgrass juice powder. Those three used together or separately each day, 1 teaspoon, will help you chelate out heavy metals that you've accumulated throughout your life. So watercress is added to that. Watercress extract taken multiple times a day significantly inhibits the activation of a tobacco-derived carcinogen in cigarette smokers. And this was done at the University of Pittsburgh Cancer Institute. So, you know, even for all of us who had people in our family who smoked, we didn't know any of this. You know, if only we would have known then. and help them, you know, maybe they'd be alive today. But you can do this now. So just put that up there. It's one of the things that can detoxify the body and prevent the carcinogens from smoking from causing cancer. Now, that's the latest on health and healing today. And also today, I'm going to take a challenge. I'm going to challenge a MD, PhD, who did a lot of good work and published some very important papers. In fact, I signed, along with about 100,000 other scientists and physicians, his Great Barrington Declaration, where a professor from Harvard, Cambridge, Oxford, and Stanford all signed this, that we were doing some things wrong. We shouldn't be putting everyone in quarantine as the Chinese are doing now, and we did. And so I'm going to listen to what he has to say. Now, here's why this is important, because what he has to say is accurate, but it doesn't go far enough. So we'll tell you what's the other side of the story that wasn't discussed. All that and more when we return. Please stay with us. Welcome back, everyone. Over the next month, I'm going to be sharing both over the computer now, video streaming, but also at the upcoming health retreat in the anti-aging clinical study. I'm going into great depth with time that I would not have now, where I can talk about something for an hour or more. And one of the things I'm going to talk about is how we master a dysfunctional part of our life and then accept it as if it's honest and real and who we really are. No, it's not who you really are, because if it were really the truth, you wouldn't be doing it. I'm going to lay that out. And we're going to start this week. We're going to look at a lot of different things and say, what can we learn from this? It's all about learning. And by the way, I've just passed, I was informed yesterday, 200 video clips. And these are really upbeat. These are really positive on cooking and gardening and exercise and stress management, and that have been filmed over the years. They're in this thousands of tape archive I have here at my home. And I hired someone who comes in, and every day they just go to work and they look for things that can motivate you and help you, inspire you, and inform you. And then they edit it down to short segments, generally 5 to 7 minutes. Because most people will watch something if it's short. They tend not to watch something if it's very long. So they're free. It's a public service. Now, we're going to get them all up on YouTube, because I have, you know, millions upon millions upon millions of people who've watched my stuff on YouTube. And none of it's controversial. It's all based on good science. But also it's going to be on other sites as well. And I'll inform you of all the sites. But you can find these if you go to GaryNall.com. All right? And then we'll tell you which sites they're on. All right? Now, let's see what we were told and our parents believed. And their parents believed. In fact, two generations learned how to smoke and wanted to smoke because they thought it was good for you. Why would they do that? Well, watch and you'll see.
You know, if you were to follow a busy doctor as he makes his daily round of calls, you'd find yourself having a mighty busy time keeping up with him. Time out for many men of medicine usually means just long enough to enjoy a cigarette. And because they know what a pleasure it is to smoke a mild, good-tasting cigarette, they're particular about the brand they choose. in a repeated national survey, doctors in all branches of medicine, doctors in all parts of the country were asked, "What cigarette do you smoke, doctor?" Once again, the brand named most was Camel. Yes, according to this repeated nationwide survey, more doctors smoke Camels than any other cigarette. Why not change to Camels for the next 30 days and see what a difference it makes in your smoking enjoyment? See how Camels agree with your throat. See how mild and good-tasting a cigarette can be.
Yep. I remember once I told my mom, I said, "Mom, between smoking the cigarettes in the morning when you wake up and drinking coffee, your breath stinks. I mean, really, really bad." And so everyone chewed chewing gum back then, right? And, of course, that hurt their teeth, but that was beside the point. But they all had bad breath. And my mom always told me, just say it like it is, you know, rather to be honest and have someone offended by it than be dishonest and think that somehow you've done something important. Well, everyone smoked and smoked a lot. And they thought it was a big deal if they only smoked 2 packs a day rather than 3 to 4. Yeah, my father, 4 packs, mom, 4 packs, older brother, 4 packs. And all my aunts and uncles smoked. When I would go in their house, everything smelled like cigarette smoke. And on Sunday, when they'd play canasta, and all of us who were smaller, we had to eat in the kitchen. They'd all sit at the big table, and then they'd give us a quarter. I remember quarter, and we'd go down and watch a movie, like Singing in the Rain, or whatever it was. And there was no problem us running everywhere. Downtown, it wasn't far anyhow. But when I would come back, that whole living room where they were playing, you couldn't see. The cigarette smoke was so, so thick. So I said, "Mom, this can't be good for you." She said, "Oh, no, no, no. Doc," you know, we had a family doctor, most people did. And she said, "He smokes." And, you know, I said, "But you're coughing, and everyone's coughing and hacking all the time." "Well, but that's, you know, that's something else." It wasn't something else. So just remember, a whole nation became addicted and millions upon millions died because the medical industrial complex was dishonest. Just remember that. Now we're going to show you a clip. And this is a clip of a scientist, MD and a PhD, who told us that not everybody should be getting in the same environment, locked down. Let's watch what he has to say.
I think we've made absolutely catastrophic mistakes. The problems have been just manifold, and they've been exacerbated by essentially making it so that you couldn't dissent. Mm-hmm. That the cost of dissenting against the policy was so high that most people decided not to do so.
And that was in the Trump administration and the Biden administration.
Both.
I mean, it's something separate from that. You have talked about the response to COVID as the biggest public health mistake we've ever made. You've said the harm to people is catastrophic. Let's unpack that a little bit. You know, when we say the harm to people is catastrophic, obviously, you know, there's 1 million people in America who are dead. That's catastrophic. What would it have been like if we had responded differently? Would we have, you know, seen like a tenth of that number, or how do you calculate that?
I mean, I think COVID's a bad disease. I don't think it was possible to avoid a lot of deaths mm-hmm. from COVID, both here and abroad. The issue is taking advantage of the scientific evidence about who's most vulnerable to COVID mm-hmm. and acting on that. Instead of acting in the way we did, which was to, in a sense, to assume that all people were equally mm-hmm. at risk, and thereby the only thing we can do is to stop the spread of the disease, to suppress the disease.
So, is it possible that had we done something different, we would have had about the same number of deaths?
I mean, I think we would have had fewer deaths.
Okay.
I don't think it would have been 10% of the, right. I think if we still would have had a considerable amount of death, I do think less than we had. Mm-hmm. But that's only if you're looking at COVID alone. Mm-hmm. If you're looking more broadly at public health, I think we would have actually done better in terms of the total number of deaths, not just from COVID, but from other sources.
Can you talk about that? Can you quantify, not the specific COVID deaths, but then the kind of things that attend to it? And, as well as, is it even possible to calculate future, whether it's economic harm, psychological harm, or health harm?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a difficult task. I mean, as you
but
can
that is
imagine,
what public right? health is supposed to be about, right?
Yeah,
it's about cost benefits of various kinds of reactions.
I mean, you weren't even allowed to say cost benefits back in 2020, yeah. of course. But that's exactly right. I mean, public health is supposed to take a holistic view mm-hmm. of human well-being, not just simply deaths from one cause, but mm-hmm. health from lots right. of other causes. So just to give you some sense of the number.
Okay. His most important statement was this is the worst disaster in human health, because after all, the entire planet became human guinea pigs. Now, he was one of three authors. He's appeared regularly on television, and he keeps saying the same thing, that we shouldn't have had everyone quarantined, those who are at most risk. Yes, but everyone else go about your life. But then his really showing he's ultra, ultra orthodox was, and very rigid and close-minded, was when he said, well, we might reduce the death a little bit, but not much. That's completely wrong. He is absolutely 100% wrong. And the fact that he's from Stanford and has an MD, PhD should not, just like I mentioned before, when the good doctor told my mother to smoke, it was good for her. And, of course, her breast cancer, lung cancer, my father's stomach cancer, and my brother's lung cancer. Yeah, that's the unintended consequence. No doctor wanted to have the disease occur because of their bad advice. But the fact is that American medicine kills more people every year than any disease in the United States. Now, I've documented that. It's been documented before me by Dr. LaPay up at Harvard University. And those were not refuted figures. It's just that nobody seems to care. There are no meetings by American medical doctors and scientists working within the medical field saying, how can we lessen iatrogenesis or medically induced? You don't see that. You don't have all the board of directors and all the owners of all the hospitals in the United States who cause these astronomical prices that you have to pay, and yet both left and right have betrayed you. They've mocked you. They've spit in your face because we should have universal health care, where I don't care if you're the poorest person or the richest person. You get sick, you shouldn't have to pay a penny out of your own pocket. And if we were an actually civilized, sensitive, caring nation, that's exactly what we would do. But I don't see any, do you? Maybe I missed it. Maybe I woke up today a little dumber than yesterday. But I have yet to see a single demonstration by American doctors saying, this has got to stop. We're killing Americans with our treatment, over-treatment, misdiagnosis, and we're killing with drugs, and no one changes anything because it's too profitable, $3.6 trillion this year. But maybe I missed all those doctors, 900,000 plus, and all the nurses with them. After all, if they really care, if they're going to work to save lives, then maybe they ought to be a little smarter than what they are. So let's get over this idea that somehow your doctor should be the person that guides you in the decisions. No. No, you better get a lot of input from a lot of different people, or otherwise you could end up just like someone that I know very... In fact, interesting. This person called me crying. This is a person I knew very well. A younger person in their 30s, because they've been diagnosed with stage 4 breast cancer, and they had to go in immediately for double mastectomy followed by chemotherapy and radiation. They were so afraid that they lost 10 pounds in 10 days. That's how stress impacts the body. I said, hold on a second. What in your lifestyle could have precipitated this? Nothing. I don't know. And so I said, don't accept their advice immediately. Go to at least 3 other doctors to get 3 other opinions. Well, the person did. And they found out that they didn't have stage 4 terminal cancer, that they had a fatty tumor. That was it. No surgery, gained their weight back, they're healthy and have their breast. Do you have any idea how often that occurs? And yet we will not focus on that. It's like you can't touch medicine. You can't criticize medicine. You can't criticize the pharmaceutical industry, just like we can't criticize the military-industrial complex. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe repeatedly in the last 20 years, members of Congress working together across the aisles said, this is insane that we're giving above and below the border almost $1.2 trillion a year to the military-industrial complex, none of which is accountable. In fact, when they tried to audit it, they couldn't find trillions of dollars. And this year they're giving even more, and now they'll use Ukraine. But maybe that money could have gone to rebuild infrastructure, to bring jobs back to America by building factories and supporting small business. Oh, no, that's too radical. Universal health care, that's too radical. I see. Term limits. Yeah, so that you can't run after the age of 110. So Nancy Pelosi and these other zombies don't end up staying forever in an entitled position to make another $100 million. But that's too radical. Term limits. Taking all money out of politics, that's too radical. Well, not in my world, it's not radical. So to the good doctor from Stanford, sir, I challenge you to come on this program and debate me. Because here's what you're leaving out of the equation. Or didn't you look at these figures? The European Union, just the European Union, the database, which is available to everyone, of suspected drug reaction reports is called their EUDRA, U-E-U-D-R-A, Vigilance, verified by the European Medicine Agency, equivalent to our CDC. So these are not projected figures, like Dr. Rose in Columbia University said, well, based upon the number of dead and injured in the United States, and since only 1% to 2% are actually reported, we're going to say 40%, or we're going to say 20%, hence we end up with 600,000 dead. No, these are not projected. These are actual government statistics. So nobody can say, well, someone's projecting 43,000 dead, 4 million injured. Of the 4 million injured, then you have the number of seriously injured, 1,879,995. I see. So that's from the vaccines. So if you've got that many people, 4 million who are injured and 2 million seriously injured, then what would the real figure be? And do you not think 43,000 dead people is serious? Do you not think 4 million injured is serious? Mind you, that's not the United States. Those figures are real. That's not mentioned. Also, what is not mentioned is efficacy. The newest studies on efficacy are appalling. And I posted them for people in this audience to be able to go up and download them for themselves and see how bad it is for people who are using this. As some, it's going to prevent efficacy from going down. No, the efficacy now is in the minus range. Quote, this is the latest as of this morning. Triple vaccinated, meaning you've gotten three shots, now up to 500% more likely to be infected with COVID-19 than unvaccinated as vaccine efficacy falls to minus 391%. Official data published by the UK Health Security Agency confirms COVID-19 vaccine effectiveness against infection has fallen to minus 391 among triple jabs 60 to 69-year-olds and minus
take a ride, get on the trip, get hip, slip and slide, and we're moving on a grooving train. Don't stop, don't strain, this feeling's like an eagle gliding. Can you feel the symbols riding high? Can you dig the vibe? Let it fly, don't deny it, face it, get with the truth. Let the rhythm break the roof, we're flowing, and the beat keeps going. Can you hear the horn? It's blowing you down on a swinging bass. It's the sound that makes you face the fact. There's no deceit. Swing is king and everything is going to the beat.
Information about the safety of aspartame, you can visit aspartame.org.
Okay, and think of all the millions of people who used it to their detriment, and think of all the federal agencies, all of them, the FDA, the CDC, who supported it and never warned you. These are the people you're still believing today. And also, the latest also right now, quote, SARS-2 COVID vaccination and myocarditis in a Nordic cohort study of 23 million residents. It's got like 30 different scientists on the, and it, the Journal of the American Medical Association Cardiology, that's who published this. So you've got a mainstream medical journal publishing an article, and they're finding out all these cardiovascular conditions, including myocarditis and other killing diseases. Now take that. And it doesn't take a whole lot of effort to jump over to all that we're seeing with young, healthy athletes in their teens and 20s, average age 23, just dropping dead. Why? Heart attacks. Yep. And yet they won't mention a word of this in the media, nor will they warn people that this is a side effect. They want everybody, including your baby, vaccinated multiple times. In fact, they even acknowledge in the latest study that the latest, and by the way, this is posted, this is the latest Journal of the American Medical Association article on this. So do you think that anyone would be cautious, any cardiologist would be cautious? To the contrary. Everybody line up and get your vaccine. But what if you have a history of autoimmune disease? Well, it doesn't matter. It does matter. I believe in the next 3 to 5 years, we're going to see a horrific outcome of people who took the vaccine who had autoimmune conditions and should not have taken it, should have taken other protocols to have gotten themselves healthy. Oh, and by the way, the latest from Igor Chuftov, SARS-2 COVID kills T cells just like HIV. It also works like HIV in the LFA1 T cell receptors. And so this is just the latest what they're finding, which means that people could end up with AIDS-like conditions in the because of what was in the vaccine, and that's because the virus itself has been shown to be genetically altered to have HIV genes in it. And the inventor, the Nobel Prize winner, Dr. Luc Montagnier, who recently passed at the Institute Pasteur, and his team found that. But still, we're not looking at who caused the problem. So, just to let you know that everything they said and everything everyone supported is not supported by the science as we get further along. So would they stop and redirect their efforts into preventing disease? No, just more of the same. So these are people that you trusted. Now we're going to go to an interesting little clip, because the very people in one part of the government you trust are set aside because it's science and you think they wouldn't screw with our health. Oh, yeah, they would. Remember margarine? Remember DDT? Remember heptachlor? Agent Orange? They really play, and glyphosate. Hundreds of times they played with your health, all at the consequence of you getting sick and having to sue manufacturers decades, frequently after someone has passed. Never early on. They never protect you early on. It's not in their DNA. But recently I saw misinformation every single day coming out on the war in Ukraine. As I've mentioned, I will mention again, I'm opposed to Putin. I'm opposed to his foreign policy. I'm opposed to them invading Ukraine. And I believe that he and those responsible at the policymaking level should be held accountable for crimes against humanity. That said, all we get is propaganda. And every time someone who's an honest journalist goes there and does their homework, they find out the difference. Do you remember the latest thing is they just found a grave with 9,000 dead bodies? Okay, here's someone who actually went to the gravesite. And this is someone we've had on this program. And here's what she found. And you can watch this for yourself so you see with your own eyes. All the media got it wrong. How convenient. They all got it wrong. New York Times, Post, all the networks. But here's someone who got it right. This is someone who went there with camera and interviewed the people. And you're looking, these are graves with caskets. Most of them were empty. But the ones that are, they have a cross on them. And these are the people who died. And this is not a mass grave. We'll go to the clip.
With new accusations against Russia, this time accusing Russia of secret burials and mass graves in a town west of the city of Mariupol. Accusations are that Russian forces threw up to 9,000 civilians into a mass grave in an effort to cover up their alleged war crimes. Reports cite Ukrainian officials, notably the former mayor of Mariupol, no longer in the city, as the source of what he calls, quote, barbaric war crimes, and according to him, Russians dug huge trenches 30 meters wide and chucked people in. So with journalist Roman Kosarov on April 23rd, I went to the site in question to see whether or not there actually is a mass grave.
It is Saturday, April 23rd, and I'm at the site of what Western media are alleging are mass graves. Now, these are clearly new graves. And there in the distance is an existing cemetery, as media have noted. This is a marking of a person that was born in 1941. Has their name, has the date of their birth, and it's obviously a known site. Now, there are also unknown graves, and they are simply numbered. But there are many that are actually marked with date of birth, or at least with name. Here we go, another one, 1964. This is the second plot. These are not occupied graves. And then these are all completely empty. There's one beyond, for the sake of accuracy, I'll take a jog down that way. I mean, this is just now, at this point, two rows, one of which is vacant. And then that's it, Western media. Nothing else.
Who's behind all these lies? Well, of course, the CIA and the military-industrial complex, because they have to keep the narrative alive. Richard Gale is on the line now because the president of Ukraine received a very prestigious award, and Richard hears to challenge the legitimacy of him receiving it. Richard, tell us what your facts are, please.
Yes, good afternoon, Gary. So, yeah, Volodymyr Zelensky, he's now being He's raised his status now to being one of the most courageous figures in the world of promoting democracy and freedom. He's going to receive the Profile of Courage Award by the John F. Kennedy Library Foundation. And there's four U.S. officials who are also going to be receiving this award. The award will be given on May 22nd at the J.F. Kennedy Presidential Library in Boston. Just before I go in, just a very two sentences from the press release. So the president of Ukraine has been hailed for showing courage and leadership as a voice of democracy since the Russian invasion of Ukraine began in February. We'll challenge that in a moment. He's been a target for assassination by Russian forces, but has continued to speak on the world stage about the threat facing his country and the fight to preserve its democracy. So I found this assassination attempt rather humorous in a way, because there's no evidence whatsoever that Russia's made any attempt on Zelensky's life. I mean, if Russia wanted to liquidate him, they could have done so easily a long time ago. Putin and Lavrov have stated repeatedly they have no intention of overthrowing the Ukraine government until some words a little more recently, because of now Ukraine making some attacks over in Russia. Last night, there was an attack on a major fuel depot in Russian territory. But we do know with certainty, and from Russia experts such as Stephen Cohen and others, that after Zelensky was elected, the fascist forces that were in Ukraine government did threaten Zelensky's life with assassination if he did not do their bidding. That we know. That's been reported in the news before the Russian invasion. So I think we can say that there's some truth behind that. But what we're seeing now is so clearly is that from these autocratic and repressive policies that Zelensky has implemented since becoming president, they've been completely contrary to the platform that got him elected in the first place. I mean, what's happening here with giving Zelensky this award, he's actually achieved the honor of redefining democracy. So take a look at some of his great democratic achievements since entering office just a few years ago, by the way, and which are now worthy of all this international applause that he's receiving. So Zelensky, he ran a campaign platform to reunite the Ukrainian speaking and the Russian speaking populace, to basically to unite the country. But then immediately after he was elected, he banned the Russian language after the election. He's banned 11 opposition parties, and most important, including the second most popular party, was the Opposition Party for Life. This was a party that wanted to keep Ukraine neutral, so it was kind of anti-European Union. And its leader, Medvedchuk, he's been under house arrest ever since Zelensky came into office. Zelensky, he's passed bills to deny Russian-speaking Ukrainians citizenship, and thereby that was a way to prevent them from having a right to vote. He's imposed sanctions against Ukrainians who oppose him, which has been including, and this has been, there's quite a few good reported cases on this, again, before the Russian Revolution, when there was more scrutiny being given over to all the human rights violations in Ukraine. So it's more by the mainstream media. But this includes the extrajudicial confiscation of people's property. So if you're a journalist and you're reporting against the Zelensky government, you could have your property confiscated. And remember, Zelensky is a TV personality, and he owns his own television production firm and everything. Everybody around him.
Richard, we're running out of time. Just run down the list real quick. Write down the list, please.
Okay, he closed all the news agencies and television programs to replace just this single uniform information policy that operates under martial law, and that there has been a much more full integration of the fascist Azov battalion integrated into Ukrainian regular army. That was done by the Ukraine's interior minister. he's permitted, well, there's been a large list of executions of mayors who were kind of they were Russian speaking members of the parliament. You see their pictures, their bodies are just left in the town square. Before the invasion, of course, he's permitted the oligarchs, such as his main handler, billionaire Kolomoisky, to money launder a lot of Ukraine's wealth by massive privatization schemes of state-run resources. He's dismissed appointed judges from the Supreme Court who could have ruled against him. This was a direct violation of the Ukraine's constitution. And I found what quite interesting was in 2018, most Ukrainians followed the Russian Orthodox Church. In 2018, there was a breakaway denomination. That's the Orthodox Church of Ukraine. And so that was just the year before Zelensky was elected. And then Zelensky reformed the state's religious policies, allowing the Orthodox Church of Ukraine to hostily take over Russian Orthodox churches, including the beating of priests. And I'm not certain. I found little evidence, but I can't really confirm it well, of Catholic churches as well. And then, okay, of course, he's continued the military assaults on the population of Donbass ever since being elected, which is to date, before the Russian invasion, was a genocide of 14,000 Russian-speaking Ukrainians since Maidan. So,
okay, that's not all pro-democratic? Well, of course. Thank you, Richard. We appreciate it.
Okay.
I'm running a little short of time, and there's one clip that I'll bet none of you are aware of. We found this clip. This is Senator Biden, head of the Foreign Affairs Committee, and guess who he is challenging in the most demeaning and spiteful manner? Is Scott Ritter, the one person who said we should not be invading Iraq because there are no weapons of mass destruction. He was right. All the American media was wrong. All of Congress was wrong. But here's the exchange that you all didn't hear. And this is, you talk about a neocon supporting war. Whoa, this is Biden. Listen and watch.
My time is up. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Biden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I envy your position. Okay. I sincerely do. I envy the ability to have such clarity on this issue. Let me ask you a question. Do you think you should be the one to be able to decide when to pull the trigger?
No, sir.
Isn't that what this is about? If you adopt the position that any time you are denied, your particular, there's four groups out there in the specters, you're the group you headed, any time you are denied, that ipso facto requires the United States and the Security Council to act on what they said they would do, which is to use whatever means necessary to take on Saddam Hussein so you can get into that particular facility. Is that not correct? Is that not your position?
Mr. Senator, I have a job to do, or I had a job to do, and that was to disarm Iraq in accordance with the provisions of relevant resolutions.
With all due respect, I'm not trying to be confrontational. I'm trying to get this as clear as I can. I really mean this now. You have an absolute logic. You put together a very tight syllogism here. You have indicated that your job is to disarm. The only way you can disarm is to have access. The only way you can have access is either with permission on the part of Iraq or, if denied, forced access, yes, right?
Compelled access.
Compelled.
Yes.
Well, okay, compelled. You sound like the lawyer and I sound like the military guy. I mean, you know, compelled, where I come from, when my old man said you're compelled, it meant I was forced. I mean, it was a real simple proposition. It wasn't, you know, wasn't much to debate. Now, there is a clear logic to that. And that's what I mean when I say I respect your position. But that means that whenever you choose a target that warrants inspection and you are denied, that ipso facto, at that moment, the only way your position can be satisfied or sustained is if the UN Security Council or the United States, acting unilaterally, uses force to guarantee access. Is not that true?
Yes, sir.
Now, that means that you get to choose the time and place when we would use force, if we use force.
No, sir.
Of course you do, if you choose the site and it's denied.
And we coordinate with the member states to include the United States.
Exactly.
And prior to us going in, we have their agreement that this indeed is an inspection worth doing.
Okay, inspection worth doing, everybody's agreed it's worth doing, and it gets stopped.
Yes, sir.
At that moment, we're an automatic pilot as far as you're concerned. Period. No ifs, ands, or buts. Now, I respect that. But now, it seems to me the Secretary of State might have a slightly different problem. Secretary of State might be sitting there and saying, now, look over there on that side. Now, I remember so-and-so and so-and-so and so-and-so, and the 12 people on this side, they're all the ones that said they didn't want to use force. Now, I'm going to have to go tell the President now that we should, or Secretary Cohen, unleash whatever it takes to get it done. And our military assessment is the same as the major's.
From WPFW in Washington and WBAI in New York, I'm Sue Goodwin. Today is Monday, April 25th. Here are some headlines. Emmanuel Macron won France's presidential election yesterday, making him the first French leader to be re-elected in 20 years. Macron beat Marine Le Pen by a 17-point margin, though over a quarter of voters abstained from voting, and Macron's victory was much narrower than in 2017, pointing to growing support in recent years for Le Pen's openly anti-immigrant and anti-Muslim platform. President Biden hailed Macron's victory, saying in a tweet, quote, "France is our oldest ally and a key partner in addressing global challenges. I look forward to our continued close cooperation, including on supporting Ukraine, defending democracy, and countering climate change," close quote. France now turns its attention to the elections for the lower house of parliament in June, a crucial test for Macron, whose coalition holds a strong legislative majority. Results then will determine how far he can go in pursuing his domestic agenda. Marine Le Pen will seek to remain in parliament, where she has occupied a seat since 2017, a top official in her National Rally Party said today. With Congress returning this week, the Biden administration is preparing to renew its push to secure COVID-19 funding, a White House official said, after a $10 billion bipartisan deal stalled in the Senate before lawmakers left for recess. In the agreement, $5 billion would be designated for therapeutics, with the rest going toward vaccinations, including booster shots and testing capacity. It covers most of the White House's request, with one key exception, which is funds for global efforts to fight the pandemic. Previous efforts by Congress to include the measure failed in disagreements over how to structure and finance the legislation. Also on top of the congressional agenda is more aid for Ukraine. President Biden announced Thursday that the U.S. will send an additional $800 million in military assistance to Ukraine as the Russian invasion soon enters its third month in what U.S. officials warn could be a potentially bloody new phase. Senator Bernie Sanders and Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez participated in a rally outside Amazon's JFK 8's warehouse on Staten Island on Sunday, criticizing Amazon co-founder and CEO Jeff Bezos and urging the company to formally acknowledge the warehouse's newly formed Amazon labor union. Sanders called for Bezos, who owns a $500 million yacht, to think about his workers when he's sailing. Quote, "Working people are sick and tired of falling further and further behind while billionaires like Bezos become much richer," close quote. The rally came as employees at Amazon's LDJ5 warehouse, also on Staten Island, prepared to vote today on whether to become the second Amazon facility to unionize. And the European Union reached a deal Saturday to tackle hate speech, misinformation, and other harmful content online. It's called the Digital Services Act, and it will require tech giants like